welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. On this week's episode, we look back on Saturday's game against Queen of the South, preview this weekend's trip to Alloa, and with the transfer window closing on Tuesday, we assess the business done so far. Yes, welcome along to this week's episode of the Blue Team Podcast. I am Colin Byers, with me, as ever, Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along. How are we this week?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad. So we were really positive last week. We were looking forward to recording last week's episode after we got in with the win. I think it's safe to say we've come back down to earth with a huge bump.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a missed opportunity. I think probably the result feels, well, the result and the performance probably feels worse at the fact that Clyde got something for their game. I didn't expect Clyde to get anything from yesterday's game. So all things combined, I think, when we left Balmoor on Saturday, a lot of frustration, probably disappointment. And I think that was echoed by Davies' post-match comments as well.
Yeah, frustration was one word that has been used quite a lot, and as you said, David said frustration as well during his post-match. So, as you said, it's probably a missed opportunity in terms of, you know, building on what we'd done last week.
Yeah, we did a lot of good things last week that we covered in last week's episode, but this week we just weren't quite on the money for whatever reason. I certainly don't think it's complacency, and the players thought, well, we've got a win, and they would have been thinking the same. I'd imagine that probably wouldn't expect Clyde to get anything against Dunfermline, but I don't know, I think we went through the motions a wee bit in the first half and never really got anywhere near them, and then the second half Queens took over. I think the frustrating thing from my point of view right away, Jason Brown playing at right back, we've got Leighton Bisland on the bench, we've got Danny Strachan on the bench, two of them easily play right back, and we play a centre back out wide. Now, I don't know what Davies' thoughts were, but we've now had David Wilson out there, we had Jordan Brown for a half, we've had Jason Brown now as well. I don't know whether he thinks it's a problematic area, that he's not happy with the team, the personnel within the team, but, you know, I think you sort of handicap yourself again. I go back to like square pegs and round holes. It's something I bemoaned when Jim was here. And Davey will be no different. I don't think it was the right idea to go with. And, you know, you mentioned it a few times yesterday that, you know, down our right-hand side, it would get a lot tighter. But with Jason not being a natural right-back, it made things very difficult.
So we'll come on to Saturday's game in just a bit more detail later on in the episode. We have some more of news it broke last week. A lot more transfers in the route as the window is about to close. It closes on Tuesday, midnight, I think it is. So we've got three new signings in. We were sort of promised two last week. We didn't get the two for whatever reason, but we've got three in. We've got two players from down south, down in the English non-leagues, I guess you would call it. First one was Josh Oinsan. I mean, these are names that I'm gonna trip over these names. Another Josh Oinsan. He's a forward. 13 games last season for Dumbarton, scoring 3 goals when he joined this time last year, actually, from them. So he had a 6 month there, played 13 games, scored 3 goals. I guess a mixed reaction from the Dumbarton supporters. You know, some of us are quite pleased with him, some maybe bemoaning the fact that maybe wasn't his work rate maybe wasn't enough. But he's certainly a big lad, 28, 6 feet 5. So another, I guess, a target man for us based on Saturday's game.
Aye, I think so. He's certainly got here a presence. I think that's maybe something we've lacked. Also, with Russell McLean, was a tall lad. He ironically, has gone to Dumbarton. So I think once he comes in and gets his feet settled, he'll do okay. And like you said, I think it will be a target man, probably have Kieran Shanks off him. I think that's maybe something that he might go down the route of, is having two up top and trying to force opposition back, especially at home, which I think we need to do. So, yeah, I think get him time. but his record's better than some of the strikers that we've signed in the last 7 months.
And the three goals that he got for Dumbarton last season, we'll post that on our social media, three very different goals as well. A header from about 6 yards out, a quick sort of tidy finish inside a 6 yard box, and then the one goal against Peterhead last season from about sort of 20-25 yards out. So different kind of goals. That's obviously what we're looking for, just somebody to find in there.
Yeah, he's come in, like you say, he's got a variety of different things that he can do. They're different type of goals, as you rightly said, and I think if we can get a player that can chip in with a few goals and help the team out, that will only be a good thing.
Eli Ikwa also signed the same day as Josh. He's a defender, come midfielder, sort of the same kind of roles as Ryan Strachan. I think centre-half, but can also play holding midfield role. Again, another one who's played the vast majority of his career in the non-league, so made his professional debut on Saturday in the home game against the Queen of the South. 23, so another young kind of player. But apart from that kind of information and what we saw on Saturday, we know very little of him.
Yeah, this is a player that we're going to have to really sort of judge based by performances. There's very little data and analysis out there for us. But you know, he's come in, he's obviously Davies convinced him, or he's convinced himself that now's the time to try football up here. So you've got to give him the backing and see how he gets on.
And we know so little about him that he's not even on the Football Manager database. So we can't even use that as a gauge as to where he's at. So that'll be an interesting one, putting him in the database. Stuart McKenzie on Saturday also signed as well, 35-year-old keeper from Cove. I think this one was kind of, there was a bit of speculation sort of this time last week about him coming in once Scott Fox had joined Cove. There was obviously a scope for one of their keepers to go, and with him not being in the squad or in the game against the Ayr on Friday, obviously that ramped up the speculation a little bit. He was released basically from his contract within the space of an hour and a half, two hours, whatever it was. He'd joined Peter. So obviously that was something that was clearly had been sort of in the pipeline for a wee bit longer than the 2 hour gap between him being released for Cove and signing for Peter.
Yeah, I think this has all come about, as we mentioned last week, the Tom Ritchie situation. It's a little bit unclear because of the injury to Kyle Roos at Aberdeen. He was, again, on the bench for Aberdeen on Saturday. So I think it's Stuart coming in. He's an experienced goalkeeper. He's done well with Cove going through the leagues. And I think even if we've got, even if Tom does stay for the rest of the season, which we hope will be the case, Stuart will be here next year as well. And if he's got a really good understudy as well, I think the experience that he can pass on can only be a good thing. So I think that in the goalkeeping department, if we've got someone that comes in for next season, a younger keeper, I think that area of the pitch will, or the area of the team will actually look really strong.
Yeah, it was mentioned that he's been given a long-term deal. So obviously, as you say, the inkling is that obviously he'll be here next season, probably be here for as the number one. Maybe a younger goalkeeper to give him a little bit of a challenge, for that number one spot, because Davies seems to like players that aren't comfortable just playing. It's a case of, well, if you don't play well, you're out of the team kind of thing. So a bit of competition for Stuart next season would be a good thing. 35 as well, name age for a goalkeeper, and what we've seen of him, especially in the last couple of seasons against Cove, he's still relatively good for this level.
Oh, absolutely. He's still got a few years left in him yet. Yeah, goalkeepers can go for a long time. Like you said, if he's got a good backup keeper, somebody that'll push him, but also knowing that if Stuart's not playing well, that he'll get in the team. I like that about Davey. Players aren't playing well, he will drop them. Obviously, he can't drop 11 players, but I like the fact that previously you'd have felt that some players were guaranteed a start every week. I don't think that's as much the case now. I think there is a fair bit of change, and Stuart will know next season if he's not quite on the money, then he can be easily dropped.
And sure, it's another one that scored a goal against us as well for Destiny. Do you remember? It was the last season of the season before.
Season 4.
He had a long punt up the park, and I think Rory McAllister was trying to claim it. But Hank, I still think it was a foul on the keeper.
The goalkeeper union sticking together.
So you mentioned Tom Ritchie. And we'll say Stuart signed, I guess, as maybe as cover for Tom for the rest of the season. The situation is a bit of a weird one because we don't really know what is happening. I think the communication between the two clubs haven't been that great in terms of, you know, letting us know what's happening or certainly confirming what Bierhead had put out on Saturday, just before Saturday's game, saying that he'd been recalled for just this weekend only. Yes, he was on. Tom was on the bench on Saturday. Obviously, the situation at Aberdeen is vastly different than maybe what it was a week ago. Obviously, Jim Goodwin's now gone. That obviously just maybe changes plans slightly. So it's a bit of a weird one because obviously Tom, being a young lad as well, maybe just doesn't ken, you know, where he's going, what team he's got to be playing for, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think from Tom's point of view, he'll want to play first-team football. And I don't know, I think him sitting on the bench with Joe Lewis at Aberdeen's got to benefit his development or his career. Even if it is just, say, for 6 months, I think he would stagnate quite a bit. Because I think since Davies come in, you know, I think Tom's done pretty well. He had a rough November, end of October, November, but he's done well since. Reports are that Aberdeen are looking at a goalkeeper for Ajax as well, so hopefully the situation will become a wee bit clearer. But like you said, it's a wee bit, communications, they've been great, but the fact that the window closes on Tuesday, you would like to think that Peter's maybe got a backup just in case, but then also if you're using wages and budget for a player that might be coming in, it probably takes away from another position. So it's amazing how one goalkeeper injury at Aberdeen can affect maybe Davies, you know, 3-4 positions that he's maybe been looking at. So it's something to keep an eye on over the next 48, 72 hours.
And two things to sort of pick up on that is when you sign a loan player, especially if you're signing a goalkeeper, there is always that potential that he may get recalled, i.e., you know, this wouldn't be the first time this season it's happened. Also, Jack Newman was recalled, you know, after a handful of games for us. And also, if Aberdeen does decide to recall him and take him back, and obviously sits on the bench potentially for, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks, however long Kyle Crews is out, once that period of time's up, he can't go then anywhere else because obviously it's outside the transfer window. So for them, I think for Aberdeen perspective, and maybe just being a little bit biased as well, the best thing they could do is try and get somebody else in, if it's cover for Joe Lewis or if it's to be a number one for the next 6 months, and keep Tom at Aberdeen because that's only going to benefit him in the long run.
Yeah, I think Joe Lewis has covered himself in any glory this last three games that he's been in. But, you know, it's a team effort and, you know, it's a whole different situation at Aberdeen. But I would like to see Tom stay. I'm sure he's putting his opinion across with his agent to Aberdeen and saying, look, I am better playing first team fit, but I could also benefit Aberdeen next season. You know, a good backup keeper, whether Joe Lewis is still there or whether a lone player comes in and goes after 6 months. So maybe one of them for Aberdeen to leave him out on loan. I hope that is the case. And I think we'd have two really cracking goalkeepers at the club. It just means, I think next season, I would be surprised if we had a goalkeeper in on loan. I know we've got Stuart has just come in, but I think that the backup keeper would also be a signed one because, as you said, we've been burnt Jack Newman, we've had Sandy Wood in goals, we've had Tom Ritchie, now we've got Stuart McKenzie. So there's been a fair bit of movement in the goalkeeping area, which is probably an area of the pitch that you want to keep consistent along with your defence. So, I'd like to see Tom come back and hopefully he does.
So, as we've said, the transfer window does close on Tuesday. Word is that Davey is looking at more to come in. I think he mentioned it in his post-match as well that he was looking for more. I can only assume that it would be the midfield area is where he'd be looking because we're kind of light in terms of that sort of out-and-out midfielders. I know we've got Jack Brown, Fozu can sort of play in midfield, but, you know, given Fozu's performance on Saturday, what we said about Jack Brown in recent weeks, that he's certainly much better playing higher up. So is Fozu. So plenty, I guess, attack-minded midfielders, but it's more the likes of the Andy McCarthy's, if you like, that can sort of hold in midfield, do the sort of dirty work that we're really looking for.
Yeah, from my point of view, I'm looking for two. I'm looking for a creative midfielder, somebody that can get on the ball and pick out a pass and see something, have a bit of vision about them. And another player similar to Andy McCarthy, somebody that will break up play, can hold the ball but release it quick enough that you can see a pass on or give it to that creative midfielder. Like you said, we've got a lot of midfielders and defenders in the squad, but none of them really out-and-out midfielders. And obviously, Fosu's performance, I was disappointed with that yesterday. And when he played in midfield, I thought it was one of these poorer games. And again, you're looking for somebody to come in, help Andy McCarthy, and then, you know, have a better balance to the midfield.
He has been quite busy in the window so far. 9 in, 8 out. And that's, as I said, as it is so far. Kevin Joshua, Daniel Fozu, Glenn Gabriel, Kieran Shanks, Boris Milingwu, Leighton Bisland, and the three that we just mentioned as well, have all arrived in the window, 8 out, as I said as well. So what have you kind of made of his business so far since coming in?
I think he's been decent. He's picked up a couple of good games. I think Kieran Shanks, I think he'll be good. Boris, when he first came in, he looked a wee bit lively, then he sort of dropped off the team for a couple of weeks. Fosu, I thought he did okay. When he first came in, the last couple of games, and a bit Saturday, we was poor. So, I mean, it's difficult. We went through a massive rebuild in the summer. Didn't quite work. We're almost doing the same again in January. But I think Dave will also have targets in mind for the summer. So, I think decent. But again, I mentioned that a few weeks. I'm just looking for everybody to kick on again.
I think we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. 24 players, Jim, brought in from the summertime up until just before he left in November. Of those 24, 14 have now left the club. So there's only 10 left for whatever reason, whether it's being recalled by their parent club loans or contracts, have they been renewed for those that left in January, or those have just been sort of moved on because whether or not Davies deemed it to be good enough. But it is quite a glaring look at how the recruitment was, or how bad the recruitment was in the summertime.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that weren't particularly impressed with the transfers that were done in the summer. I think that sort of just backs up the fact that a new manager's come in and deemed, eight of them to be surplus to requirements. There might be a couple more going out by Tuesday. If he's bringing in two or three more, he might decide that we're a wee bit heavy with numbers. But like I said, you did a rebuild in the summer and then we're doing it again in January. It's difficult, it really is.
Of those 10, I should say, O'Keefe and Dixon are long-term injuries, so that really takes you down to 8, if you like. Tom Rich is obviously 1 as well, so we reckon if he's coming or going, potentially down to 7. The 7 that you've got left are Danny Strachan, Ryan Strachan, Cody McLeod, Sandy Wood, Robbie Scullion, Lee Wilkie, Jack Wilkie, and Enoch Wilson be that have all come in. And really, Enoch hasn't really had much of a look in since
Scullion's gone missing.
And Scullion's gone missing as well.
Andy Wood doesn't play.
Exactly. He's a backup. So really, out of all those players, Danny hasn't really been playing much either. Cody really hasn't been playing much either. Ryan Strachan is the only one, along with Wilkie, that's really getting a regular game out of those 24 players.
Yeah, it's incredible that we've ended up in this situation for one reason or another. We sat down, what was it, end of April, start of May, was pretty confident of our chances this season. We thought if we could keep the vast majority of the squad that we had last year, add a couple of good players into it, we'd have a reasonably successful season and be pretty safe. And they, looking over our shoulders, worried. And it's proper game belly up with the transfers that we've come in. Like you said, it's a damning indictment that the state of play that Davies come in and deemed all these players aren't good enough. But again, the players that have come in, that they've got to be better quality than what we've had at the club before in Davey's eyes. So, yeah, we're really looking to kick on.
Yeah, that last six games of the season really sort of lured us into a false sense of security there, didn't it?
Yeah, we got above ourselves.
just a little bit. So, yeah, so we'll look at potentially another couple. And obviously, the window shuts on a Tuesday, but, you know, obviously, you can still get players signed through the sort of free transfer market. Anybody that's unattached as well, but you know, we've said before, anybody that's unattached, if you like, at this stage of the season, there's maybe a reason for that, but we'll see what happens. So let's get on to Saturday's game then. Queen of the South were the visitors. And off the back of last week's performance, not really the performance, but the result, you kind of, we thought coming into this game, we were sort of full of expectations, maybe even, I think we would have said before the game, even like a point would have been a decent result against a team who's full-time, but not really doing particularly well this season. But also keeping one eye on what was happening with the Clyde game as well. You know, matching their result or even doing better than their result would have been a fairly decent Saturday.
I wanted just to get something for the game. I felt even if we got a draw, we'd have just kept that momentum going of 4 points in two games. And, you know, again, you look at the positives to take out of it. We've seen the Clyde score after about 10 minutes in the game 1-0 up. I never for one second thought that they would manage to hang on and get something from it. I thought that once Dunfermline kicked in, they would easily score a couple. But it wasn't to be. And, you know, the positives we had from last week, it just was for some reason lacking yesterday in the game.
There was the three changes, the three new signings all started. Richie obviously was out. He was on the bench for the Aberdeen game. Bisland dropped to the bench, and so did Jack Brown, and which was a bit of a surprise to us when we got the team lines and saw that Jack had been dropped back down to the bench, because I think the vast majority of people that sort of commented, or certainly what we were reading, he was he'd done well and everybody was pleased with him. My thing about the game is, you know, we've won last week, why change a winning side? I didn't get the sort of mentality of doing that. Yes, you maybe want to introduce your new players. McKenzie obviously had to play because Tom wasn't there. But as for the other two, maybe just ease them in rather than sort of throwing them in for the start.
Yeah, completely agree. I don't know why we changed. Also, I can reason that Stuart started, but that would have been the only change that he made that was enforced, whether Jack was carrying a knock. But even then, he came on after, what was it, 25 minutes, half an hour for Jordan that got injured. So I'm not quite sure. I get that you sign a new player and you want to get them in the team, but I'm not sure it was the best time to do it. Hindsight's a great thing, but I wouldn't have changed a winning side. And, you know, I think the fact that these guys are new, you maybe it told a little bit. But doesn't make up for the all 90 minutes, but there was times that you could see it was a back line and it hadn't really played together.
Yeah, especially when you're moving up from, you know, non-league in England to, you know, League One in Scotland. Some will argue that there's not much difference between the levels, but I think if you're, you know, used to a certain level or a certain way of playing, the Scottish game and the English game at those levels are vastly different.
Oh, aye, absolutely. Complete. I mean, folk, like you said, will argue there's not much difference, but there is. You can watch non-league games in England and you can tell there's a different style to it. You know, the defender, he's come in, didn't cover himself in glory, but, you know, you could argue there was a few players on Saturday that were well below par that fit we've seen, so you wouldn't lay the blame at anybody's door. Like I said, I also deny the fact that Jason was starting at right back. I think that was also an area of the pitch that, for some reason, Davey likes to chop and change it. I don't know why. because obviously brought in Bisland as well in this window. So could he now have played at right back? Jason at centre back along with Ryan. Again, that would change a winning team. So that's why I was surprised that things were changed.
Well, I got seven games now for Davey. And out of those seven games, I think you could probably say there's six different players have probably played in that area. And I know the first couple of games he played with a back four. I think Enoch was at right back. Donny played maybe as a right winger. As you've said, Bisland's been there for a couple of games. Jordan even started there one game as well. That's Jason playing there as well. So there's been three or four different players in there. And, you know, you'd want to kind of wonder what his thinking is for moving Jason over there, because as good as a defender as Jason is in terms of mobility and you know, getting up and doing that right hand side or as a wing back, he just doesn't have it.
Nobody can convince me that Jason Brown is a right back. Even Jason himself could convince me. He is a centre back, and he's good at what he does there at centre back. That's why I can't understand moving him. I think even him and Ryan have got a good understanding. They've played a couple of times at centre back before. I go back to that, I don't know why you change a winning side. I didn't think that Queens weren't coming into the game in fantastic form either. So I felt that if we could have kept the same sort of team, same shape, and gotten an early goal, or even a goal to go 1-0 ahead, we'd have put the pressure right on Queen's South. But alas, it wasn't to be, and there were certainly a few things that Davey can look to improve for next week.
And I know club media outlets usually are, post-match, they normally have what you classify as like safe questions, then they're going to ask difficult questions. But you just want one of those questions rather than the sort of standard three questions we seem to get post-match after the Peterhead game. Just somebody say, well, you played Jason at right wing back, what was the thinking there, or why did you change a winning side? Just to see what his thinking was, because at the minute, we didn't know what his thinking was.
Yeah, we've put our centre-back at right-back, and we've got two natural right-back or right-wingers, whatever, full-backs, whatever you want to call them, sitting on the bench. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see in the media after anything that's been slightly different the week before, maybe asking the question. I do think that I'm never the best lover in in-house club interviews. I think they're all very safe questions. I think when you didn't really get to the bottom of any point. And that's normally what you'd call the journalists and the outsources that would ask it. Obviously, you didn't get that at Balmour, but you'd just like for something different to be asked, and, you know, need to question the manager's decisions, but just to get a better understanding of why he maybe thought something would work.
I mean, it might be something as simple as, well, Bisland maybe picked up a knock through the week. I know he was playing for the United's B team on the Wednesday, which he has been since he's arrived. So that might be a simple case that he's maybe picked up a knock after that game and wasn't fully fit, and that was maybe the reason. But, you know, until somebody asks those questions, we will never know.
Yeah, and in some clubs, then I like the speculation that goes on around their own club. But if, you know, if there was something that could be said, there's a match report after the game as well. You can, you know, almost bullet point certain things after it as well, that this is the reason that happened. Obviously, you could pick throughout the whole 90 minutes why certain things didn't happen, but I think when you're putting one of your more consistent players in recent years to right back, where, like I said, nobody can convince me he is a right back. I'm just surprised. I could maybe understand that if the two, if Leighton Bisland and Danny Strachan were out injured, or if they hadn't trained for the week, or, you know, for personal reasons were on the bench, but they weren't quite ready to go. I can understand all that, but again, you leave yourself open to speculation and slight criticism on social media.
Just getting back to the game then, you look at the stats after the game had finished. We had five shots in total, just the one on target, which obviously was the penalty, 38% possession, whereas the visitors had 18 shots, 5 on target, and 62% possession. So it tells you just how, I wouldn't say maybe dominating the game were, but I do think the second half they were much better, and I think they certainly needed to be much better second half. I thought the first half was almost like a non-event, really. It was two sides that were evenly matched, maybe, isn't it maybe the right way of thinking, but certainly both sides didn't really do much to encourage either fan base that they were going to win the game. Neither keeper was really tested.
The first half for me was a game that neither team really wanted to lose, but they didn't show enough ambition either side to go and win the game. Nobody took it by the scruff of the neck. I think the goal for Peterhead, in a weird way, came at the wrong time, because I think it made Marvin Bartley's half-time team talk that a lot easier. If they'd gone in level at half-time, you could maybe have said he was pleased with certain things, but they were looking to kick on the fact that they went in at a goal down. I can imagine they've been very disappointed with him and his coaching staff. And they came out and they did take control of the game in the second half. We looked a yard off it, and the longer the game went in the second half, we just seemed to drop further and further off their play. So, yeah, quite a disappointing all-round performance.
We might have been a couple up before then. I mean, I just really maybe clutching the straws a little bit. Arnie McCarthy had a shot for the edge of the 18-yard box, which for our sort of angle, our sort of view, it maybe was a wee bit closer than what we thought, or maybe it was a wee bit further than what we maybe imagined, but certainly got the keeper scrambling across his goal.
Yeah, you normally get a good idea how close it is by the keeper and his reaction. Like you said, he's sort of scrambling across. I thought he was going to nestle in the bottom corner. Mm. I think we were up celebrating just as it went past the post. So yeah, it looked close. But again, we said it a few weeks ago, it's probably fallen to the wrong player. He's not a natural goal scorer, and you're just looking for somebody to be able to curl that around past the keeper.
There was an earlier penalty shout as well. And again, it was just doing it to our side. It was a shout, but was it a strong shout?
It's a strong shout from us, but if it's given against you, you're pretty disappointed and you're annoyed. To me, yeah, you're asking for it, but I don't think many of the players shouted for it either. So, yeah, probably on this occasion the referee got that one right. He didn't have a great game, the referee, by the way, or his officials, but yeah, I think on that occasion he got that one right.
I was going to say, I don't think the referee had a great game, but certainly the linesman to this side, the Schmeichel lookalike, certainly didn't help him out too much. I mean, there was a couple of occasions where there was offsides that looked offside and he didn't give anything, and then there was the one with the throw in, he's 2 yards away from it, gives it one way, and then the referee who's 50 yards away from it, standing in the centre circle, gives it the other way, and then the lineman goes, oh, okay, it must be that way then. You know, I don't like to sort of mention referees after a loss, but just this season entirely has just been poor referee after poor referee.
Yeah, the referee, he didn't help him sell out, and obviously his officials didn't really help either. A couple of weird decisions, but I just think the standard of referee, and even across in the top flight, they've got VAR in it now as well, and you know, some of the decisions that's coming out of there, seeing one at Ibrox, a red card for Nicky Clark, and then there was a penalty decision as well, challenge with Ryan Jack. So I just think the standard of refereeing right across the divisions has been pretty poor. I think it's also pretty telling that you get, you know, Highland League referees predominantly doing Highland League, but they're coming up to do League One games from time to time, and I think there's enough referees. But on the flip side, referees will probably come out and say, well, there's much criticism as they get in social media and the footage back on TV. Is it any wonder folk that want to become a referee? So there is that argument as well to it.
You must be getting soft in your allies. You're actually making an argument for the referees now.
Unfortunately, without any referees, we don't have football to go to. Oh, so right. It's getting that counterbalance.
The penalty we did get then, I think there was no doubts, no questions about the decision.
No, I can hear any complaints. So I think Queen's really had a complaint with either referee dished out a yellow card, and even the player didn't really have a comeback to him.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of shows Shanks' game in a way. You know, he's able to run in behind, he's able to take players on. He's, you know, when he gets the ball in that area, you feel like there's something going to happen here.
Yeah, and I don't think we've had a striker like this since we had Naya Payne last season. I think the strikers we brought in the summer, none of them really had the pace or the willingness to go on and run in behind. I think we mentioned it, Kieran's first game. When he came in, either Montrose or Arbroath, Airdrie, sorry, that his willingness to run across the defence and stretched him would, I think, over the next 6 months would prove vital. You know, we got our penalty through that.
that's 2-2 for him as well, having gone two without scoring. So he's starting to find his feet a little bit, and obviously that'll help him. So we go into the half 1-0 up. You know, in a half that maybe we didn't really deserve to go 1-0 up, but at that kind of stage, you certainly would have taken it.
Yeah, I don't think either team would have deserved to be in at half-time 1-0 up, but the fact that we got ourselves a goal to the good, it's even more frustrating that we've allowed that sort of second-half performance to creep in. And it would have been the ideal situation. We would, you know, we'd be in Clyde and now we're 1-0 up against Queens at home in a game that we hadn't played well in. And that's sometimes why you need to pick up results, and in games that you're not playing well in, you need to take something from them.
Yeah, and then obviously the second half was just, it was really just a, I don't want to say a game of two halves, but it certainly did feel as though that they came out fighting a little bit more. They seemed to want it a little bit more as well. The sort of 50-50s, the headers and things like that, they all did seem to be first to most of them as well. And I just wonder as well, maybe our mentality was, right, let's just see if we can had this suit for the entirety of the half, because we did seem to sort of drop off a little bit deeper, even deeper than we were. I mean, there was one occasion in the first half, I think it was, we had a break up for, I think, a corner for them or something, I think it was, but a bit of a counter-attack, and Kieran Shanks is the ball on the right-hand side, and there's literally nobody in the box for him, nobody's making a run, and you sort of look to your left, and the back five are all just sort of standing static. Andy McCarthy's obviously in the midfield area, and nobody's getting forward to try and help him. And that was mere evidence, certainly in the second half, where that attack intent just didn't seem to be there. It was like a mere case of, let's just hold off and see if we can get this game, see this game out.
Yeah, you touched on that about set pieces. I'm not a lover of this, taking everybody back at a corner. It just means that even if you win the first ball, you don't have an outlet. You've got nobody up there trying to, you know, split the game up. I think you've got to be leaving at least one, maybe even two, and it forces your opposition to, you know, almost bring three back to try and counteract that. Like you said, that there was that moment in the first half, Kieran, you look in the box, nobody there, and there's players. I wouldn't even say they were running. They were just sort of like lightly jogging in that midfield area, doing absolutely nothing to try and influence the game. Now, whether they felt that it was that nothing was going to happen, but at least try and get up here and give Kieran a wee bit of support. I did feel that at times the midfield were left wanting. They were, you know, AWOL quite a lot. Whether it was they were going too far ahead as a unit, or, you know, dropping too deep and allowing Queens to boss the midfield, especially in the second half. I think Fosu and Jack Brown never really got close enough in the second half for whatever reason, whether that was a game plan to try and sit off and let Queens have the possession and, you know, and try and they get picked apart, but, you know, it didn't work.
Well, the midfield was non-existent, because the midfield for the vast majority of the game was Andy McCarthy.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jordan went off injured, and then when Jack came on, he went to the number sort of 10 role, and Fosu dropped in. And as we said earlier on, I just wasn't his position at all. I think Fosu, he prefers to be higher up. But when you're playing in that role that he was asked to do for much of the game, he's got to do a lot more of the donkey work. He's got to be a bit more mobile and try and track back, get forward, you know, make tackles, break the play up, and that just wasn't there. So when you've only got, you know, Andy McCarthy really is your midfield, eventually you will get overrun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, I kind of maybe Fosu's preferred position, but I think his work rate, he's tracking back, I thought was poor. There was times, I think I've seen it twice, that Kieran Shanks ran past Fosu to try and help out Jason at right back. I mean, that's poor. Fosu's got to be doing that, like you said, he's got to be tracking back a lot more. If he's not in that advanced position, he's been asked to play a more deeper role, he's got to help out his team. We can't afford to have so-called quote, luxury players where people think that they're above tracking back. To me, it was poor. I get it, maybe he's not his natural role, but that doesn't affect you putting in 100% for your team.
We can't, at this stage, we certainly can't afford to be carrying anybody. You know, you want everybody to be given giving it their all for the cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Davey would be the first one to say, look, if you're going to get performed to a high level, then you know you'll be sitting on the bench. Like I said, I can understand it maybe in somebody's natural position, but that doesn't stop you tracking back and helping out your teammates and putting in a shift. Everybody can hear an off game. It maybe was just one of them. For Fosu, so again, it's probably a player that you're looking at against Alloa to see if he's playing. Is he going to pick up his performance?
The three goals that we did concede then, the equaliser, was it good play down the left-hand side? I try to think back if it came for an error, but certainly once they were in behind, you could see the goal was coming.
Yeah, once they got past us and turned us and got in behind the defence, I don't think there was any way that we're going to stop it. They've got, you know, men running forward. We just couldn't cope with it.
And well, you know, it's maybe as good a goal that for Queen's perspective. The next two were just calamitous errors at the back. The last thing you want to do as a defender on your debut at home is make a glaring error, which then results in a goal, and that's exactly what happened to Aqua. I don't know what his thinking was, whether or not he was thinking. I don't know. He's the last man. I think it was level with us actually, where he was. So it was just a long ball up the park, and you think, right, just go and head it, clear it, danger's over. And I don't know if he misjudges it and it goes over his head, or if he's going to leave it, or what he was thinking, but before he came it, the bar's in the back of the net.
Well, if ever he was thinking, hopefully we'll not be thinking that again, because I'm not saying it costs us, you know, getting sent out of the game, but it certainly had a massive impact on it. Like, I think David touched on his post-match as well, he's just got to go and deal with it. It's one of them, it doesn't have to be pretty, just get rid of it. If, you know, if you put it in the stand, or if you volley it, you know, 50 yards up the pitch, but make sure you deal with it. You know, you never let it. We've seen it a few times lately, defenders just allowing the ball to bounce and we're in half. Just go and meet it and go and deal with it, and then you pick up the pieces afterwards. You know, and he's taking it, the striker's taking it past the goalkeeper. I'm pleased that McKenzie didn't make any contact with him, because I think it would have been a red card, and then he's out for, you know, the next 3 weeks. And also the Tom Ritchie situation up in the air, that could have been a bit of a calamity. But yeah, I just think on his debut, not one to really remember. And again, you'll be looking to see if he's in the team next week.
The third one as well, then, we're calling it a bit of an error. McKenzie has come out for a long ball, has sort of won it, but again, it maybe just the way that Burlock's going this season, it's fallen to a Queen's player, and he's got basically an empty net, even though he's, what, 30 yards out. He just needs to get it on target, and that's exactly what he does. Interesting that McKenzie felt as though he needed to come for that ball in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only going by what I can remember yesterday. I haven't seen any of the highlights, but I thought he didn't need to come for it. But then, if you rightly pointed it there, he maybe felt that, you know, with the defending of the goal, you know, 10 minutes beforehand, that he felt he needed to come rushing out and try and get something on it. Like you said, the way where luck is, it's fallen right to the striker, and he's put it in the back of the net for 30, 35 yards out. But I'm not sure he had to come for it, but I can almost see why he has.
Well, as my dad said on Saturday, he maybe thought he came out because he couldn't trust the defenders in front of him. And that's saying something for a guy that's on his debut.
Yeah, like you say, he's 35, he's come in for Cove, so he's been around a long time. You can maybe just sense when the defence is fragile as yours, that he maybe felt the need of a wee bit of help, and he's got to try and come out and clear the lines. Hey, if he comes out and he volleys that in the car park, you would say it's good goalkeeping, a good starting position, he's done well. But the fact that it's ricocheted off a player and, you know, fallen to the striker, it just sort of confirms the luck that we're having just now.
And it wasn't just sort of one-way traffic. There was maybe a couple of half chances for us in that second half. I think particularly when it was 2-1, both for Jack Wilkie. One on the break, good play. Actually, just one or two sort of passes, and we're in behind them. Wilkie's effort on the run, a first time effort just across the goal, he sort of pulled it a little bit. Just wondered, and I think I said to you at the game and said, I just wonder if the pass to him was a little underweight, and that's maybe why he sort of pulled it a little bit. If it had been pinpoint, he might have been able to sort of smash it across the goal like he was looking to do.
I think if the pass was, you know, a bit firmer, and he allows it to run across his body, onto his natural left foot, he'd probably get a better effort away. He got the effort away, but like you said yesterday, the pass just wasn't strong enough, and he tried to, you know, take it on his instep and didn't quite make the best of contact. But again, it's small margins, but it's something that you would think for a player that's playing week in, week out, it's a simple pass across the, you know, the front of the box, and yeah, Jack was unlucky.
Yeah, he had a free kick as well, a deep one sort of swung into the back post. One of those, it's just crying for somebody to just to get something on, and you would think if you just get a touch of any kind, it would go in.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be a good contact, just only sort of contact on it. Again, I think Nabdi was a really standout player on Saturday, but again, I think Jack Wilkie can be pleased with his performance. He was getting up and doing that left-hand side. He's done well for me this last 2 months. I think he's taken him a wee bit of time to settle in. And a difficult team that's shipping goals, but you know, I think he's done well. Like, yeah, I can't really hear any complaints with his performance.
So we were sort of creating chances, but again, I think what David said in his post match is it just needs somebody to score the goals now.
Yeah, defensively, I think we've been okay in recent weeks. I didn't think we were great yesterday. Again, defensive mistakes have sort of cost us. And you're trying to eradicate them as best as possible, but you can't legislate for a defensive error. And, you know, it's human nature. Mistakes will happen. But you've got to try and pick out the positives for that game. I think that performance was better than the performance we had against them, you know, earlier on in the season at Hope, when they just absolutely dominated the game from start to finish. We never laid a glove on them. So I think there is small signs of progress, but I, like I said, it started to show. I think it's even more frustrating the fact that Clyde got something for their game against Dunfermline. It maybe just makes things seem a wee bit worse than what they actually are.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty of it. If it was one game you thought, well, Clyde aren't going to get anything out of that game, it probably would have been on Saturday. But it just shows you how I think Dunfermline will probably win the league, but they're almost stumbling towards the finish line rather than being domineering, if you like.
Yeah, there was a few folk on social media for Dunfermline that just were not happy with the performance of their team on Saturday, and it's not the first time, you know, from we previewed the game down at East End Park a couple of weeks back, their home form isn't the best, and as you said, they're probably, I think they will win the league, but they're just sort of stumbling over the finishing line.
Right, let's get your thoughts on the game then. A few have come in again. Start with Michael Wilson. One step forward, two steps back. I think that's pretty much the sort of feeling. You know, you feel as though you're getting somewhere, and then a result like that, just a result or performance comes in like that.
Yeah, the positive from the Clyde game. Today I had been blown out of the water with the performance on Saturday, but I certainly think it was backed into earth with a major bump.
Will Roberts, we were a total shambles. They had too much space and time. We were second to everything all over the pitch, with Clyde and Kelty picking up points as well. It's very disappointing. Same thing you were saying there. Total shambles, maybe a little bit of a exaggeration, slightly, but in terms of the second half, maybe.
Yeah, probably a little harsh. But, you know, that's the frustration that we've got. We've seen that we can get a result against Clyde, and we've just really followed it up. You know, I think it was a key game in terms of trying to keep the momentum going. Like I said, we've come down to after that a big bump.
Paul Cluett, I understand what philosophy we're trying to apply, but we sat at least 5 yards too deep the whole game, and you can't expect two midfielders to cover 3 hectares between them for 90 minutes. We've signed some promising players, but we need to be more streetwise, i.e. we need to spot the opportunities to ruffle up the opposition early on in the game and stick in a soldier.
Can he play midfield?
They shouldn't stand a chance against 3 centre-halves, 2 of which are 6'4", but far too easy to get crosses in the box. or getting shots away from the edge of the box. I think what we're saying there about the where two midfielders are sort of being overrun in that midfield and maybe not getting the help that they're needing.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. I would generally be curious to find out what our Thurl count is for the whole season. I think we are a team that's a bit nice. I think teams now come to Ballymood and there was maybe that factor last season where they were worried about coming up. I don't think teams have got that fear anymore. I think we are a wee bit too nice to play against in terms of we didn't get enough challenges in. And like I said, ruffle up the opposition early on. I don't think it happens nearly enough as it should.
The point there about the centre halves as well, two of them being over 6 feet four, they win in their headers. And I think we sort of touched on that earlier on. But it does seem as though that these guys are they're big units. But you know, if they win in the headers, they should be at the moment. They're probably not.
No, they're nae. And that's when they need to try and step up and realise that there's a challenge in front of them and go and stick your neck out and win the header.
Andrew Jones, nothing positive to say. No width. Jason played at right back, but always drifting into the centre. New signing bedding in slowly. Forwards not linking. Gave too much respect. Probably confidence. We have seen them pass well previously, but today there was nothing. Just wasn't that sort of link-up play that we were looking for.
No, it wasn't. Certainly free-flowing. Like you said, the second half was poor and were defending far too deep. You try and pick out positives. I guess the performance of Kieran Shanks to an extent, try to run the line well up top, going back for the defenders. Andy McCarthy was a one-man band in midfield. But again, if that's your positives, you're really clutching at straws.
Graham McLean, given too much space to the opposition, need to be more streetwise. Again, what we said earlier. Games against Clyde will be pivotal, but picking up points elsewhere could be crucial. Ninth is still very much in our grasp. And that's a good point, actually. We've still got two games against Clyde. But if Clyde are going to pick up points against Dunfermline, we need to then be picking up points as well in games that we maybe aren't looking to, or any favourites to get anything out of, I should say.
Yeah, we need to pick up points as well. Like I said, I generally didn't expect Clyde to get anything from the game on Saturday. I hoped that we would get something that would just, create that bigger gap. But it wasn't to be. But, that game, the 18th of February, 16th of February, and the Saturday that's going to be, massive, probably season defining as well, depending on what results happen between now and then. We've got two games against Clyde, and you think that could be the ones that sort of decide who finishes ninth.
Jason Argo, again, we're easily beaten down the flanks. Defensively, we were poor. Midfield and defence sat back too much. Changing right back at 2-1 down was a bit baffling. And there was somebody else that sort of picked out with Neil Thompson again. The use of the subs was again baffling. Sticking on our right back after losing a goal was a bit strange. And Jack Brown being subbed off as well when he was subbed on. 2-1 down, you would think, right, let's go and try and get something at the game, but we've changed our right backs. Jason came off and Bislin came on, so obviously no change in the system. But you've now got an actual right wing back there.
Probably should have started the game. To be honest, you could have taken off the new guy in defence and put Jason across and gives you a more natural feel to it. But yeah, I agree, you're 2-1 down. Last position, unless it's an injury, you'd be changing as your full-backs. I think we need to get somebody else on up top. But we mentioned it before the game, you look at the bench and it's a lot of defenders. There's not much that you can turn to that bench and go, that's a player that could give you that creative spark. And the player that I did think might be able to help with that creative spark was Jack Brown, and then he was taken off. So, yeah, and like that comment there, he's brought on and then he's taken off. Not sure if it's happened there, but I think Jack will be disappointed that he's, first of all, he didn't play, and then he was taken off after being substituted on as well.
Final one then, for Scott Reid. Defence was a shambles. Don't like Jason playing at right back or right wing back, whatever he was supposed to be playing. First half was okay, but not great. Second half, we just didn't turn up. Shanks runs his socks off, closing players down, and McCarthy does what he does. The only two I thought played decent. And, when you hear Graham saying today's man of the match, Saturday you were like, this could be a tricky game to pick out, but it was McCarthy got it, and I think out of those two, I think him or Shanks were the ones that it certainly deserved it.
Yeah, I think there could only have been that two that would have been in contention. I agree with Scott's comments that there's nothing there to argue against. And it was a disappointing afternoon. Like I said, I felt that we could have tried to really build a wee bit of momentum. Even getting a point from the game would have given us, you know, 4 points from the last two games. But, you know, that takes us into the Alloa game, which again will be a tricky away game. But it's something that I feel that we're almost at a point of we've got to start picking up points away from home as well.
Yeah, so let's go on to the Alloa game then. As you said, it's probably we're now at the point where we need to be picking up points away from home as well as at home. Picking up wins against Clyde might be all well and good, but as I said, we need to be picking up more points, especially away from home as well. Especially with our goal difference being so poor as well. You know, we're level with Clyde at the moment, but obviously they've moved back up into ninth because of the goal difference. This might be one of those games where you look at it and you go, right, we really need to pick up something here because our next two games are Clyde and then Kelty.
Yeah, we've got a better performance at least on Saturday. I think you know, a win would be fantastic. Get a point, you try to be happy with it, but I think the performance level on Saturday needs to be improved to what we've seen yesterday at Hope McQueen South. It's okay looking at games and thinking, right, we've got Clyde coming up, we can try and get 3 points there, but towards the end of the season, the fixtures will be crucial because there's going to be teams that know that they won't finish 9th and 10th, that they want to get promotion playoffs, so there's going to be certain players that are almost going to be on the beach, so to speak. So, you know, if Clyde and Peterhead are playing them teams, you might actually come up against, I don't know, a Kelty or a Alloa that are playing Clyde. Clyde could go and beat them because they've got something to play for. We probably are now at a stage where we've said it a few times, you sort of write off games from time to time thinking we're probably going to get nothing out of it. But I think now every game that we go into, we've got to be trying to at least get a point out of it.
The previous two games this season was a 5-0 loss down there and then a 2-0 loss at Balmore. So, you know, we're at the stage where we haven't even scored a goal against them this season. But last season, funnily enough, if you look at the four games, we'd won the first two, then we lost the next two. So I wonder if that's going to be the case this season, where we've lost the first two, maybe win the next two. I mean, that would be a good omen.
So does that mean we're now our last four games against Alloa has been defeats?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a record there to put straight as well.
Yeah, and four defeats without scoring as well.
Without scoring a goal either. So, you know, when you look at it like that, it means that the disappointment on Saturday is even magnified in terms of you winning the Taurus, I think, away to Alloa would be a tough game on your calendar as such. But the fact that you're coming to having not scored in four games against them, you know, I certainly, like I said, I think there's certainly got to be a performance in the team from improved performance from Saturday.
In their last six in the league, they've got 3 draws, 2 wins and 1 defeat. And that defeat was on Saturday, a heavy defeat to Airdrie. So, you know, fairly, what do you say, inconsistent, but, you know, they're a difficult team to break down, but they're going to score an awful lot of goals, but they will concede as well.
Again, another team like that doesn't score a lot of goals, but will concede. It's either going to be one of two ways, I think, on Saturday. It's either going to be like a basketball game where both teams will try and attack, but neither team really get, or it'll be two teams that will maybe be happy to settle for a point. Neither, I think, Alloa's got any worries about looking doomed, but probably a win for them on Saturday would, you know, put any lingering doubts. You just wonder if a win for Peterhead, clutching at straws, then might start looking over their shoulders. I think it would, given their form of, you know, 5 unbeaten out of 6. But the fact that they got a heavy defeat against Airdrie might just put a wee bit of doubts in some of their minds. So, again, it's how you go down and hit the right attitude.
Yeah, and you mentioned there earlier about team selection. I mean, team selection's got to be really interesting. You know, it starts with the goalkeeper. You know, is Tom available? Is he back when I can until probably neither hand the time? Or indeed, if Aberdeen do sign somebody else before the window shuts on Tuesday. And then you look at the defence. I know, I mean, the lottery of who's going to be playing right wing back, you know, first turn is it this week, perhaps. but I certainly think if you look at the performances of some of the players, And compared to the week before, I certainly think you need to maybe just change it up just a little bit, maybe one or two changes, and maybe just take some of the players, the firing line a little bit.
Yeah, when you go through your team, you start with the goalkeeper, and then you go right back, and it's two positions that are up for debate already. I think he's got to make a couple of changes. I think there's maybe a few players there on Saturday that thought, I wouldn't question their commitment, but I certainly question some of their work rate. There was maybe two or three you could pick out. So again, maybe changing it up a wee bit wouldn't be the worst thing to happen. Depends who he also takes in before Tuesday. Davey's looking for a couple, you know, somebody with embalmer tilts on Saturday, there'll be at least one coming in. So with Kane, there's going to be somebody coming in at least. Is there going to be a couple of players going out? That's maybe in, you know, the plans. Is that why Davey didn't play certain players on Saturday? Maybe Kane's, they're maybe moving on, whatever. There's a few things up in the air. But the team selection on Saturday, when we get the lineups through, will be really interesting.
And it's really important that we get something out of this game. Again, you know, you look at the results, the fixtures that we've got coming up, we need to get minimum a point out of this game.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, is it Alloa, Clyde and then Kelty. So, I mean, it's a big month coming up. We had a really tough month, and I think it was in November, when we seemed to get an absolute doing. So this is a month where really you're looking for a minimum, what, 4 points? A win against Clyde and hopefully something against Kelty or all of that, and maybe even 7 points that you're looking for, and you know, remain unbeaten. But it's a big month for us.
Okay, joining me now on the podcast, a man we've heard from a couple of times already here on the Blue Team podcast, from the Wasp's Nest podcast. It's Kieran Mooney. Kieran, how are you?
Yeah, good to be back on. Always nice to chat.
How are things? We're just chatting off air about with Christmas time and things like that. How's the return to work and all that been for you?
Okay, it's just been the usual. Alloa have made it more stress than it needs to be. Unfortunately, it means the weekends are no longer as fun. It's good to be. It's nice to get a bit of routine back, isn't it? Get the podcast back, get the football back at the weekend and stuff. So, all good.
And we're well over the halfway stage of the season already, which it seems to have kind of flown by. How would you kind of assess where Alloa are at this kind of stage?
I'm content with it. I definitely think there's big, you know, major factors in our team that need to be improved on, and there's points of concern. But if you take it kind of black and white, and you put a little bit of perspective over it, we're, you know, a couple of points off a third. We're still in the hunt for the playoffs. Whether we will be in that position in a month or two's time is debatable potentially with some supporters. But I think if you could have asked us last season, would we want to be in this position? It would be a resounding yes, because where we were last year under Ferguson, it's a big difference.
Inconsistency, would that be a word you would use? You know, was it 10 wins, 5 draws, 7 losses?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you can flip the stats whatever way you want. I'm sure the manager will tell you it's 2 losses in the last 11, which, you know, on the face of it is very consistent. But like you say, inconsistency has been the key thing. You just kind of, we went through a spell over Christmas where we were really flat and boring and didn't really seem to have much kind of a style about us, which is not what we would have said in the first half of the season when we were like top scorers in the division. We seem to get a bit of that back, but now it seems to be the defensive side that we're struggling with. So I suppose, like you've just said, inconsistency is the key word. You don't really know what you're getting at the moment.
And you seem to be spreading the goals. I think there's 3 or 4 players that have scored over 5 goals this season, but Connor Salmon, top scorer with 8 certainly in the league. So it's good that you're not sort of relying on one man.
Yeah, that's been good in that sense, and definitely the defence have stepped up in that sense as well. Daniel Church has provided a lot of numbers, tags. Like, Scott Taggart's been scoring a couple of goals as well, scored against Peterhead in the last game. So it takes the pressure, because when you do start with your strikers as Connor Salmon and Ross McKeever, no disrespect meant to them, but they're not like consistent goal scorers, are they? Samuel's done excellent this season to be on 13 across all competitions, but during that spell, he's also had a 10-game goal drought. So we need goals across the team, and that's been something that we've been okay with, to be honest. It's now our worry is on the other side of the park, unfortunately.
And as we sit here and record just now, we've got just over, 24 hours till the January window closes. How would you assess the business done so far, and are you expecting any more before the window closes?
I would hope so. I think we definitely need some more. We've been depleted, I think, by injuries this month in particular. We've had a lot of kind of substantial, significant injuries, which have made the options a lot weaker than what they were at the start of the month. We've lost young Kieran Offord, who scored a good few goals. He's been recalled by St Mirren, so we're definitely lacking options. We brought in Luke Strachan, so grandson of Gordon and son of Gavin at Celtic. Decent option, has slotted in well. Not a position we desperately needed, but he's made us better. Apart from that, we've swapped the goalkeepers, our sub-goalkeepers, one in, one out, and we've taken a punt on a young boy released from Raith Rovers. But again, it's not adding much quality. You'll get that classic, I'm only going to bring in what's better than the starting 11. I would argue if we've really done that, I'm awaiting something marquee, and I'm hoping it's going to be this week, because we could do with some reinforcements.
So let's go on to Saturday's game then. After this past Saturday, are you expecting a reaction? Will you still be smarting after Saturday's result against Airdrie?
Saturday was a sore one. That's probably the worst game we've played all season in terms of just calamity at the back and no real flow going forward either. So there has to be a reaction. What it can be is any worse, because I don't think that's possible. Hogarth stopped that from becoming a cricket score at times. I would hope that, you know, at home that we'd get back to our best. We've got a decent record against yourselves this season, but again, it just kind of depends on the manager's selections, which have been questionable, you know, to a lot of supporters playing players out of position. Who's picking up injuries this week? The unpredictability of the Alloa team at the moment is our Achilles heel, and who knows what will happen on Saturday.
Decent run of results against us this season, but also at the tail end of last season, because he's won the last two games of last season, and then obviously the two this season. So it's four wins in a row now that you've got against us, and we haven't scored a goal. So does this make it much more difficult, because you're expected to win these kind of games now?
I suppose you have that sort of pressure. The flip side, and it's not going to be the most popular thing to say in a Peterhead podcast, and I don't mean it by any disrespect, but it's probably the game. It's like the game that you won. It's home to the team bottom of the league, and a team that you know you're pretty capable of beating. What I will say is, this is the first time that we've played against a David Robertson Peterhead. Yeah, I think it was still McAnally when we came up to Balmore earlier in the season, so it's a different prospect in that sense. It's all change at Peterhead since the last time, you know, we played as well. So you've just got to take every game in isolation, and to be honest, form against a particular team, especially in this league, it matters not. So yeah, just got to show up on the day. It doesn't matter if it's against Dunfermline or against yourselves or Clyde at the bottom of the league. If we play like we did on Saturday, then, you know, anybody will beat us. We've got to up our game and deal with our own sort of house first.
Does it make it difficult for you guys as well, because it's obviously a relatively new side in terms of, you know, it's a new manager, David Robertson. He's brought in a few players, he's shipped a few players out. So in terms of sort of looking at it, do you see it as a completely different side altogether, or is it still Peterhead, they're still losing kind of thing?
No, for me anyway, I wrote the Peterhead piece this morning for the programme, and to me it's completely different. Like, the spine and the core of the team, like, gone are, you know, Russell McLean, Ryan Dow, and obviously Paul Dixon as well. He's not played a major part, but, you know, that's a spine at the start of the season that you were looking at and thinking, well, there's your Peterhead key players. Mm-hmm. You know, you signed three in the last week. You signed Kieran Shanks at the start of the window, who I really rate as well, and it's a different prospect. But I think for me, when there is so many changes in January and so many changes as well, Peterhead are quite, you know, known for bringing in players that aren't well known to the leagues. It's so hard for, you know, opposition managers to keep track of it all and know what to expect. So you've just got to focus on yourselves at that point, and you've got to back yourself. If you play to the best of your ability, it doesn't matter who you're playing against, you can take 3 points. And I think that's the way that we've got to look at it on Saturday, because no doubt there'll be a few home truths said in the Airdrie dressing room at the weekend. I know the manager came out, and it's not very common, but named players individually and said they weren't good enough. So it's all in house. We've got to kind of find it within ourselves. It doesn't really matter who we're playing to up our game this weekend.
Is that the reaction for your manager? Is that because the standards are so high then?
Yeah, Brian does demand high standards. I'm always not completely sold on digging players out by name in post-match interviews. I don't think it's fair when 11 of them failed on Saturday to then go pull out the names of Scott Taggart, for example, who's been, you know, you could easily say man of the match, and if all game he's played, that he's been excellent. And I think the manager has to take a lot of responsibility for some of the poorer results of the season and the way that he sets up. I think the major gripe with Alloa fans is the fact that we have Mark Dernan and Andy Graham sitting on the bench when we shoehorn left-backs and right-backs and centre-mids into the defence, when you've got two quality defenders who would, you know, arguably go into most squads in the division. So I think the manager has to take a lot of the, you know, blame as well, but it's the players that go out at the end of the day, and I think he is quite right to call out complete complacency on Saturday, and it's the first time he's done it. So I think when you do it every week, you lose the effect. But if you do it every once in a blue moon, then you might get that kind of kick up the backside.
So finally, then, if you were a betting man, would you be sticking on another Alloa victory and clean sheet as well?
I would definitely not be putting on a clean sheet. I tell you that for free. I think Peterhead are definitely scoring more, and they're causing teams problems. I would take a replica of your Queen of the South game last Saturday. I can see it being potentially a bit of a slow start for Alloa, maybe a wee bit kind of hangover from the previous week. But hopefully, once we find some flow and some rhythm, we can get the victory. I'm hopeful, and I am confident. I'm always confident, and I don't know why, but of getting 3 points on Saturday.
Well then, Kieran, thanks very much again for your time. Pleasure to speak to you as always. Good luck for the remainder of the season. I think there's still one more game between the two sides, so hopefully by then we've got a few more points on the board.
Yeah, I appreciate it. All the best to you guys as well. Cheers.
And that is it for this week. We do hope you have enjoyed it. My thanks to Kieran Mooney from the Wasp Nest podcast for joining me, and to Martin Smith for his company. As always, a big thank you to you all for listening and for your comments and questions. Do keep them coming in. I've been Colin Byers. Myself and Martin will be back again next week. So until then, stay safe, and we'll see you all again very soon.